Hour 3, RBKD here on the Horn. Texas, Kansas State tonight at 7:30. We'll get into that game a little bit in the 6 o'clock hour. Patrick Davis is on his way to the Irwin Center. It's one of his many roles here at the Horn. Does a great job engineering. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Happy to have Cameron D. Parker, who's in the house.
Shout
What's
out.
Up, Cam?
How you guys doing?
Are we
doing
close
good,
enough?
Brother.
Can I call you Cam?
Yeah.
And do you like to be called Cam?
Probably. I have no preference.
I probably should have asked that first.
Just called him Cam. Cam.
Right. Have you guys had your moment of silence yet for Tate Martell today?
No.
Whatever.
His career's over with. He's putting it up.
Is he really?
He's done.
Did he ever even play?
No,
I don't think
so.
He ever played anywhere.
God.
Nothing meaningful, at least.
Do you know how many stops now that he actually ended up at? Was it 5?
Ohio State, Miami. His last one was UNLV, right?
Committed to A&M, right?
Think so.
Okay.
Was he at Central Florida?
Man, I lose track. You gotta go
I lost track, too.
You got to go to the Wikipedia on that one.
And he wasn't doing anything, so.
He wasn't doing anything. He was a 5-star, though, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Ohio State, I think, recruited him. That was his first start, right? Was Ohio, not first start, but that's where his first school where he actually was on campus and.
And then left.
And then left.
Yeah. All right, I didn't know about that. Speaking of recruiting, we talked about earlier, you can get to hornfm.com. We talked some Texas football to start off the 4 o'clock hour, that first segment there. And Rod mentioned 5-star linebacker Harold Perkins, who committed to Texas A&M a couple weeks ago. And apparently this is Woody Womack, who works for Rivals, and he's got a blue check. So we got to listen to that, Rod.
Shout out.
And he said after talking to him yesterday here in Hawaii, it's safe to say his situation is in flux.
Oh.
Florida could be the team to beat.
Whoa.
Mr. Napier.
Wow. That's a game changer right there. I didn't know that. Who did they? Because they
so
were.
So that's good news that he's not just taking visits and it's going to be A&M, but it's bad news that Florida's the team to beat.
Yeah, I guess that's bad news for, well, as long
go to
as,
Florida
long,
or
long
A&M.
As, if you're that much into the Texas A&M rivalry, unless you're happy the Aggies don't get him, you can celebrate that if he is indeed going to Florida. At one point, I saw who they did he bring his DC from Louisiana? Is that who he brought with him as his defensive coordinator? Who was, is it Tony? That's his DC? Did I get that name wrong? Did I just throw that name randomly out of anywhere?
It was Todd Grantham. But
okay.
Obviously, that was beforehand with, you know, and Grantham got fired.
So I wonder, because I remember at one point it was a report that he wanted to bring in basically the Oklahoma State defensive coordinator before he ended up going to Ohio State. Sorry, getting my O's messed up. But he went to Ohio State, and there was a lot of talk that Jim Edmonds may end up with Florida, too, before that.
So it's saying Florida expected to hire Sean Spencer as defensive line coach.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I was just wondering who the defensive coordinator was there who was calling the plays and who maybe. So it's still Tony. Is it Tony? Did he bring Tony with him?
Yep, Tony,
okay.
Yep.
So he brought Tony with him. Okay, that's what I was asking about.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. One other note here before we get back to the NFL, and this is in the NFL. Ken Norton Jr. has been, it's funny, I talked about Seattle and one and done, and really what are they going to do? They're in that weird spot that, do you trade Wilson? Does he really want to be traded that much? And do you start the rebuild? Norton is out in Seattle.
Yeah. Could be the beginning of more turnover with the Seattle Seahawks. That is the word on the street, is that something's going to happen there. Some big move, some big shift. Could just be, you know, Russell Wilson exploring the open market, maybe trying to see if some team wants to put up the trade capital to trade for him. Or maybe Pete Carroll's done. Maybe they want to start over with Russell Wilson, but with a new leadership there.
Yeah,
something's got to give there.
Something feels like it's going to give, and we'll see how that plays out. Once again, you can get to hornfm.com, 4:30, if you want to listen to that conversation. Certainly, a lot of the focus here in these parts, or these neck of the woods, is Mike McCarthy. And is he going to be back? Now, if you listen to Jerry post-game, you could have easily read into that and said, I don't think he's coming back. Now, his son, Steven, had some words kind of defending Mike McCarthy and said, no, he is going to be back.
Yeah.
Essentially said that.
Well, yeah, that's been the topic of discussion among the Cowboys fans about whether Jerry Jones is so disappointed in the loss in the first round in the wild card that he'll decide to move on from Mike McCarthy. Stephen Jones cleared up some of the speculation. He was on 105.3 The Fan, and he said he expects Mike McCarthy to remain Dallas's head coach. He's absolutely very confident in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens with
Kellen
Moore
and Dan
Quinn.
Only one other guy can trump him. I mean, essentially, Jerry can trump him, but that's about it. So if he's saying he's staying, then he's staying. So I think it'll be Dan Quinn or, you know, Kellen Moore.
So if you have Mike McCarthy back and you lose Dan Quinn and or Kellen Moore, I'd be surprised that Jerry wouldn't step up, especially with how much he loves Kellen Moore.
I would just pay them some ungodly amount.
Pay him or make them the head coach.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, you could do that. I don't think Kellen Moore is quite ready for it. Dan Quinn,
I don't think
course,
he is either. Jerry is may think that, though.
Jerry may think
or may
that.
Or may not even think that. He just doesn't want to lose him.
Doesn't want to lose
him. That's what I've heard with Jerry, and that's how much he thinks of Kellen Moore.
Yeah, I mean, because I think when you look at losing both of them, and we had the thought experiment last hour about if you could lose one of those guys, which one, you know, would you give up? And I took devil's advocate and said, you know, if you're looking at it from a scarcity perspective and scarcity determines value, then in my opinion, you actually may look at Kellen Moore as the more valuable piece to keep, even though Dan Quinn actually is more ideal to take over as a head coach if you want to get rid of McCarthy. Just because if you want to replace Dan Quinn, there is a Vic Fangio out there on
Fangio.
The
old,
Vic Fangio.
I haven't corrected
sorry.
You, but we
sorry.
Got a tweet on it. So
Vic Fangio out there. Yeah, people are really particular about that. Obviously, I'm not trying to disrespect the man.
Fangio. Yeah, I want you to say it like that.
But also, Brian Flores is out there. Raheem Morris is out there. You have a lot of guys who actually have proven themselves as defensive minds, but also as a head coach, they have some experience. So you could bring in a guy with a similar track record mm-hmm. to a Dan Quinn. There is nobody you could bring in with a similar track record to Kellen Moore who could take over your offense, and that's where you have most of your investments right now are on the offensive side of the ball. So that's why I think he may decide, if I'm giving up someone, Dan Quinn's the guy I got to give up, I'll invest, I'll double down on Kellen Moore.
And one of those investments had, a lot of people have been talking about is Amari Cooper. So we talked about it yesterday. I mean, ideally, you could cut Zeke right now and swallow some of it, but the reality is that contract hadn't even started yet, Rod. So
no.
You can't do that until next year.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And even then, you're gonna be hit with a lot.
Yep. No, I mean, that was mismanagement by
it's just dumb. It's gonna
the Cowboys. Yeah, I mean, that was mismanagement by them a while ago, and that's probably why, you know, there's talk now that Amari Cooper, you know, could potentially be on the chopping block, or they may try to trade Amari Cooper because the Cowboys just cannot afford to have their salary cap this lopsided on the offensive side
right.
of the ball with just a few positions because Dak is demanding top five money. Unfortunately, because you paid him like that, Zeke is demanding top five money, and Amari Cooper is as well, and it doesn't make a ton of sense when you started breaking it down. So there was John Machota, I think, had the report earlier today, and a lot of Cowboys fans were surprised at it, but when you look at their salary cap, it actually makes sense. He said Amari Cooper has 3 years left on his contract, but the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, but the team could choose to part ways to create extra cap space this offseason. It'd be an easy fix. Cooper, when asked about being back next season, said, quote, "I don't make those decisions. I honestly don't know, but hopefully," end quote. So if they want to quick fix to their salary cap issues, that would be a way to start.
Yeah.
And you do have wide receiver help. I mean, I guess Michael Gallup's going to be a free agent. Is that? Yeah, I believe he is going to be a free
agent. Michael Gallup is a free agent.
He's going to be a free agent.
So do you re-sign him? What kind of money is he looking for? Do you try and go through the draft? Brian Broaddus of 105.3 The Nine, you hear with a fan, you hear Broaddus a lot here on the horn with Bucky and Aaron. He said this team will be nothing like you just saw in 2021. Stephen Jones knows that. It's why Zeke and Amari were sad in postgame. Bobby Belt, also on 105.3, The Fan, said this. I feel like Amari Cooper's gone. That's just the sense I get. Nobody's told me that, but I feel like he's gone. And they got some decisions to make. Look, the Zeke move is going to cripple them. Also, remember that if you're a sports fan, live and learn, right?
Yeah.
And I know we get attached to these players, and it's the easiest thing to do is just defend the player. Man, you got to pay him. Pay the guy. Don't be pissed off when your team is really put in a spot a couple years down the line. You can't play both those sides, okay?
Yep.
Live and learn.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Can't. I mean, it's – and I remember when they paid Amari Cooper, I said, I would have rather have paid Amari Cooper than a Ezekiel Elliott
yeah.
in this modern era of football, but you are where you are, and you can't afford to pay everybody top five money.
No.
And Jerry wants to pay everybody. Jerry loves all of his players, and he wants to pay everybody.
It's noble.
I think he deserves it. Yeah, I mean,
it's dumb.
Remember he paid Jalen Smith, and everybody was like, what the hell?
Right.
Why'd you pay Jalen Smith? Jalen Smith wasn't even asking for more money. He was like, yeah, just pay. Jalen, I love you.
You've
done a great job.
He's a great guy.
He's rehabbed, done a real rail, and we think it's a good story, so we're going to pay him a lot of money. And it's like, well, that's what Jerry does. So Jerry's got to realize can't pay all the players. And I think now, because you can't, at least you can trade Amari Cooper. Somebody will trade for him. Nobody's going to trade for Zeke.
No.
You're stuck with Zeke. That's an albatross
no
now around your neck.
Yeah, Cooper probably someone will touch.
Oh, yeah, you could trade Coop for – you might get a second-round pick for Coop.
Yeah. All right, I'll have both of you guys weigh in. Cameron, I'll start with you. Is Amari Cooper back next year in Dallas?
It's tough because I believe Cedric Wilson's a free agent, and I know Noah Brown's a free agent. I think it depends.
Gallup is, too.
I think Gallup is, too.
Depends on who they bring back. I think if they bring back all three of those guys, which I don't think is going to happen because Noah Brown had some really poor body language after that loss to the 49ers. I think they'll bring Cooper back, but if they move him.
By the way, settle down, Noah. You know who you are, right?
Me?
No, Noah.
Oh, Noah.
Like,
right. Yeah,
body language. It's
my goodness.
Get it with maybe someone like a CD Lamb.
Seriously.
It's like, dude, you're Noah Brown. Your body language needs to always
you
be great.
You should always be upbeat.
Yeah.
You should be the positive guy on the sideline.
I'm in the league.
You should be the clapper.
Right.
Guys, let's go.
Sorry, Cameron. Continue.
But also, Cooper's production this year, last year, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys think he's a top 10 receiver right now? Would you take CD Lamb over him?
Yes. Yeah.
Then I think you
even with the drops and Lamb needs to clean some stuff up. Yeah. I mean, I like Cooper. I don't think he's a top 10 receiver.
I'd probably take CeeDee Lamb now just because the contract is a lot more favorable and, you know, he's younger, more upside, that kind of thing. I like Amari Cooper, but yeah, I'd take CeeDee Lamb now over him to build my passing game around. And I think that, you know, it'd be nice to bring one of those other guys back. But Michael Gallup, something tells me he wants to try to get some big-time money, and
mm-hmm.
then he may get it. He may get some team that offers him more money than the Cowboys are willing to, or how Cowboys even can on the open market. And then you start looking at Cedric Wilson, who you talked about it, and I agree with you. You think he could be a starter for like a third of the teams in the league, potentially.
He is a free agent. They signed him for a one-year deal
yeah.
this last year for $2 million.
Yeah. And
that was a good deal.
I was going to say, that's good value they got out of him. And turns out, man, maybe you can get him back, you know, for another two-year deal, but maybe he wants more money on the open market. I'm not really sure.
Noah Brown is unrestricted free agent, so he can go anywhere he wants. Cedric Wilson is a restricted free agent.
Oh, he's a restricted. So at least you'll have first dibs on him.
Yes.
As a restricted free agent.
I would re-sign him, and a lot of that will depend on what they're going to try and do with Cooper. But the reality is, they're going to have to free up some space.
Yeah. The Cooper one, I mean, that's a big move. I bet they'll try to see if they can manipulate, right, the salary cap in other ways. If they can find some other way, try to, you know what, manipulate, actually. That's illegal. That's against the CBA.
Massage?
Circumvent. They can circumvent the salary cap a bit and give themselves a little bit more wiggle room. It's like, yeah, it's like tax evasion and tax avoidance. Tax evasion is illegal. Tax avoidance means you're damn good at your job.
Yes.
That's the difference.
You've been a good lawyer today.
Well, I'm just saying, that's it. That's the
devil's advocate in the first hour.
Same thing, though.
Yeah.
Same stuff.
Well, we'll see how this all plays out. But Dallas is in a tricky spot because they feel close, but they certainly have to make some changes, and we saw that when they faced really, really good competition. And some of that, I still think they need to restructure their offensive line. You're stuck with Zeke, Tony Pollard, your best back, and now you're dealing with this kind of the wide receivers and how all that stuff plays out.
Yeah. No, I think, honestly, I think the Cowboys are in a good position because they have some young talent at key positions. The running back contract for Zeke is going to really be an albatross for him. And how they approach rebuilding their offensive line Because I know it measures out pretty well, but we all saw it get exposed a little bit. That's going to be key for them as well, and how they handle these coordinators, which one's leaving, who's staying, and who do you replace them with?
Right. Look, they've got questions.
Key questions.
Arizona may have more questions, guys. This team started out 7-0, and they got their ass handed to them last night is what happened.
Yeah, it did.
34-11. It didn't feel like that. It felt over with at 21-0 when Kyler Murray just crapped the bed and gave Long and the Rams a free six, free seven. Arizona is in a tricky spot, guys, because you got to roll with Kyler Murray. The question is, do you roll with Cliff Kingsbury? And personnel-wise, I thought this defense was better, and I guess they were throughout the first seven games, than they looked in the last seven games. Like, their defense has some personnel issues.
I think they need to do an exhaustive, thorough study and a breakdown of Cliff Kingsbury, and he needs to be fully involved in this, of course, part of his man-in-the-mirror moment, and figure out why his teams, whether at the college level or now a big enough sample size at the NFL level last three seasons, why they hit a tailspin after the midpoint of the season, and then they essentially they go downhill. I mean, that's just the reality of it. In his last, if you look at this, is NFL career, 2019, 2020, and 2021, his teams lost 7 of the last 9. In 2020, they lost 5 of the last 7. In 2021, lost 5 of the last 6. That was also the case at Tech, too. But at Tech, 5 of the last 6, 4 of the last 6, 4 of the last 6, 6 of the last 8, 6 of the last 8, 5 of the last 5. His teams always seem to peak at one point in the middle of the season or early on. And then once they start to slide or fall off, they don't just fall off gradually. No. There's a drop, cliff. Precipitous drop. They just fall off a cliff. And that's what they did this year. He's, no pun intended, he's got to figure out why they fall off that cliff.
Yeah, I mean, they finished with 3-5 regular season. Look, they started 8-1. They really should have been 9-0. Do you remember that regular season game against the Packers when they're driving for a touchdown and they have it all set up and you had the miscommunication with Kyler Murray and A.J. Green and Green didn't even, look for the ball?
Oh, yeah.
Like, this was a 9-0 team who were beating some good teams. Good teams. They were playing with them, including the Packers, and they couldn't even stay with the Rams.
They were winning without their starting quarterback NFL.
2-1, baby.
Well, not saying Colt McCoy's a scrub or anything, but still, winning without your starter is a big deal, and they were able to do that. Yeah, so I think they have some of the pieces. I think they have a lot of the pieces, actually. They got to figure out. There's something about the culture of coaching that Cliff Kingsbury implements that has his teams peaking at the wrong time. He's got to figure out how to get better as the season goes on. We talked about that with the 49ers, right? 49ers started off actually sluggish. What are they, 3-5
3-5
to start the season?
They actually finished out 7-2.
Yeah, exactly, right? And you don't want to start 3-5, but you want to finish on the upswing. You want to finish ascending. You don't want to finish on the decline. And that's what his teams do year after year. This is way past a pattern. This is even past trend. This is who you are as a coach now, Cliff Kingsbury. You got to figure that out. And are they willing to be patient with him? And are they willing also to work with him to try to figure out a remedy to that issue?
I think they are. I think they're going to stick with him. Obviously, you stick with Kyler, and you're exactly right. They need to assess what's going wrong. But they also need to look at their personnel. Defensively, they got to make some changes. And their offensive line didn't hold up at all.
No.
As the collapse was happening.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's troubling for me because I'm a Cardinals fan. I like the Cardinals blueprint. Like me some Vance Joseph, but they got to figure out something. If you are trying to figure out exactly what you need to do about your home situation, I recommend checking out my friends at Open Door. OpenDoor.com/KTXX. Great spot for you if you're thinking about anything. Think about selling your home, whether you're looking to sell your home now or later. How about you go to OpenDoor.com/KTXX. You can find out what your home is worth right now. You can get a competitive cash offer on your home within days. If you like the offer, you can sell directly to opendoor.com. No prep work or showings are required. Just answer a few questions and complete a contact-free video walkthrough, and you can do it all online in a few easy steps at opendoor.com/KTXX. I visited opendoor.com/KTXX on my own. I was just curious what our home was worth in this current market, and I was blown away by the offer from opendoor.com, and you will be too. So go check it out for yourself, and you can sell your home the new-fashioned way at opendoor.com/KTXX. KTXX. According to the Austin Board of Realtors, last month, the median home price of a home in the metro Austin area was upwards of $455,000, and the average home spent only 20 days on the open market. So that's good news for you if you're a homeowner. That means the property values remain at record highs, and it's now time for you to take advantage of that at opendoor.com/KTXX. That's opendoor.com/KTXX.
So Rod has really hit these numbers, just to reiterate, because they really stand out. The Action Network actually tweeted this out. Cliff Kingsbury's into the season as a head coach. All right, we're going to start at Tech. 13. Lost 5 of 6. Next year, lost 4 of 6. Next year, lost 4 of 6. Next year, lost 6 of 8. Next year, lost 6 of 8. Next year, lost 5 of 5. He's done. 3 years at Arizona, lost 7 of 9. Lost 5 of 7. Lost 5 of 6. Right, it's glaring, man.
Yeah.
And Tech, not even as much, because they wouldn't have had the talent as they're maybe facing Texas and Oklahoma and some of those schools. Mm-hmm. Arizona, and I'll even give them credit or give them a little bit of a break in 19 because the roster wasn't built. This roster, though, and last year's roster was good enough to not lose 5 of 7 and then 5 of 6.
Yeah. I mean, if you're good enough to start 7-0, then you're good enough to finish better than what they 1-5 is what they end up finishing. So I think, you know, ultimately, now that you have, you know, you've identified the problem. You've identified the trend and the pattern. Now they got to figure out how to disrupt it and then how to remedy what's going on with Cliff Kingsbury's teams at the end of the season. I don't know. That is troubling. If I was a general manager or I was an owner, I'd be really, really curious as to what Cliff Kingsbury's thoughts on why his teams collapse at the end of the year.
Good dude, man. He was fun to cover. I was a big fan.
No, I mean,
I'm rooting for him as a person, but it's right there. I'm rooting for you too, Rod. What are you ranting about?
We're going to do some Texas football discussion.
That'll work.
Jahlil Billingsley being acquired via the transfer portal. It's really good news for the Longhorns. We haven't talked about it a ton. I want to get into some of the numbers and how he can make an impact and what Sark's vision is as how to utilize Jahlil Billingsley and the tight end position overall. We'll get into that and a couple other nuggets. Working on some defensive video breakdown a little bit, and we'll get into some of the – I haven't totally finished the exhaustive breakdown. I finished the film study, but now I'm breaking down the actual numbers. But I'll give you a sneak peek about some of these numbers that I have on the defensive side of the ball, too. We'll get into that, too, on the other side. And on the other side, right here on Rod's Rant of the Day, right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've got it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to get into the Jahlil Billingsley acquisition. He was the tight end from Alabama, and he actually decided that Texas was the spot that he was going to commit to, went to the transfer portal. I believe he was the top-ranked tight end in the transfer portal and also spent time with Sark in 2020, was one of his tight ends in that Alabama offense. And we talked about it, even though Sark didn't really utilize his tight end, Sark has claimed, and like I said, Sark claims it. You can believe it if you want to. I just think it's coach speak. Sark claims that the tight end position is the most important position in his offense behind the quarterback. That's what he said. And I actually do believe him because I think most people are thinking about the passing game when they hear a coach say that. And for Sark, he's thinking about the running game. Remember, Sark is also on the record for saying the touches for his running backs, touches, whether it be in the passing game or as a rusher, that the touches for the running back position, that ultimately is the identity of his offense. Right, and it makes sense too with Bijan this year and Hillard Rojo this year. That's the most talented position for Texas. And I think for Sark, when he starts talking about the tight end position being the most important behind the quarterback, he is talking about their presence in the run game as blockers. Now, I do think he's evolving because you start looking at it, and I went and crunched the numbers because I watch a lot of film.
What do you do?
Exactly. And the Longhorns last year ran 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, about 40% of the time. Their main base is 11 personnel. That's half the time they run 11. About 40% of the time, though, they're running two tight ends out there. And half of the handoffs that Texas had this year in the running game were out of 12 personnel, around 49%. Last year at Bama, it's hard to think he's been around here for a year already, but he has. 2 years ago at Bama, Sark's offense, half the handoffs, more than 50% of the handoffs actually, were out of 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. So when he says he thinks the tight end is the most important position behind the quarterback, he's saying the quarterback is the facilitator and the identity of my passing game. But when it comes to my overall offensive identity, I want the running back, all right, and the touches to the running back, I want that featuring that, all right, and that usage to be the identity of the running game. But I also... He's talking about how to combine the physical presence of the running game with the passing game, and that's through the tight end position. Now, granted, he uses tight ends more as blockers than runners, but I believe the Jahlil Billingsley acquisition is Sark trying to evolve as a coach, seeing that in the Big 12, all right, because he's not at Bama with Bama's talent anymore, in the Big 12, he's going to need a tight end that not only can bring the elements that obviously can be an extra added blocker to the running game, and with Bijan, you don't need any skilled elite blocker, but also he needs somebody that can stretch the field. So what happened to Sark last year, often he became very predictable in his play calling, and honestly, I think it was almost his play calling was, it seems like robotic at times out of 12 personnel, only because he was going to run a ton out of 12 personnel, and everybody knew that.
The tendency was there. So if you see two tight ends this last year come in, you're not worried about them as a threat.
Yeah.
And you also probably know what they're running.
Yeah. If you look at it, Texas out of 12 personnel had a 68% run rate. So 68% of the time, damn near 70% of the time, they're in 12 personnel. They want to run the football. And it was their most successful running personnel package, I should say, last year.
Even with defenses knowing you're probably running.
They still could run it effectively. And they ran it to tune of 5.5 yards per rush. And I think mostly it's because you have a once-in-a-generation running back. I mean, you're a really elite runner out of that. But he knows if he still wants to give Bijan Robinson that added advantage of an extra blocker, and also still want to evolve the passing game, he's got to have a tight end that can stretch the field. Well, my man Jeff Howe brought these numbers up, but they are startling. You look at depth of target. This is when you are targeted, how far down the field on average are you when you get a target from the quarterback? For Jared Wiley and Cade Brewer, you're talking about 3.8 yards and 4.8 yards, respectively. They're not even 5 yards down the field when they get their target on average. Jahlil Billingsley, 9.6 with Sark, 10.5 last year. So at least he's a guy vertically that can threaten safeties, those safeties who are coming down in the box too often to try to neutralize Bijan Robinson. Now, now the RPO element of having a tight end that can also leak out for that skinny post route or that glance route, now you have that as an option too. And he's a guy you can actually put out in the slot, and he's not as tall and long and rangy as a Jared Wiley. I think he's like 6'3", and Wiley was like 6'7". But at least I think he is as athletic as a Jared Wiley, probably even more athletic than a Jared Wiley. And it looks like he is a more skilled route runner than a Jared Wiley or a Cade Brewer. I don't think he's as good of a blocker as Jared Wiley and Cade Brewer, so that is going to be on Jeff Banks.
Right, and Wiley wasn't even that great of a blocker.
He wasn't, but if you look at...
Who's a good blocker?
He was, but you look at Pro Football Focus grades, they have Wiley as a better blocker than Billingsley.
Do they? Interesting.
Yeah, they got Billingsley as basically the worst blocker on the offense for Bama.
So how do you utilize him? We talked about maybe more flex yesterday.
You should, I think, for Sark, it'd be important to just make sure that, you know, you don't put him in a position where teams can exploit his weakness, which is as an inline blocking tight end.
Yeah.
If he is an inline blocking tight end, more oftentimes than not, he will be exploited because that's just not what he's good at. But you can flex him out, like you said. For those who know what a flex is, it's kind of right there off tackle, little flexed position there. Or he is as a slot receiver. Hell, you can even put him out wide, which they would do with Cade Brewer often. Mm-hmm. They put Cade Brewer and Jared Wiley out wide all the time, sometimes to be willing blockers when they'd run a running back screen with Bijan Robinson out there.
Or a wide receiver
or X-Man. Yeah, somebody like that. So they've done that before, and he can do that blocking in space. Probably be easier than him taking on a defensive end or an edge rusher or a linebacker. Maybe just getting a chip on a DB would be a little bit better because he is athletic. So I think
just cover him up with your size.
Exactly. So I think just trying – exactly. He's getting away with your size. I think just trying to make sure that you don't put him at inline tight end consistently. Can he be there sometimes? Of course he can. Of course. But if I'd had him right there, most of the time I'd have him running routes.
Right.
Very rarely would I have him at inline tight end to block.
No, that's not going to happen.
And I think that's why he started by me. He's like, no, I'm not going to have him blocking. I will have him running a route. And when we run RPOs, which he's going to run more of with Quinn Ewers. Remember, Sark wants to run RPOs as much as any team in the country. When he was with Bama, they ran more RPOs than anybody else in the Power 5. Nobody ran more RPOs than him. He wants to run a ton of RPOs. Remember, we talked about it. Didn't see a lot of RPOs this year. I think the reason you didn't see a lot of them is because he wasn't comfortable having basically Casey and Hudson Card have them processing that much information, having that much on their plate. I think he wanted to simplify things for them. He already thought that the job was a little too difficult for them at times. I think we all agree.
For different reasons,
right? Exactly. One was probably pocket presence more than anything and chemistry with the wide receivers. For Casey, it was about lack of arm strength at times to make some of those throws. And the thumb. Right? We all get that. So with Jaleel Billingsley, I think you're going to see him add a new dimension to the offense where your tight ends will actually stretch the field vertically. But I do think that, you know, Sark is going to continue to run a lot of 12 personnel. You saw it at Bama a lot. I think you saw probably more 12 personnel for Sark here at Texas than you even saw for him at Bama.
Yeah. Because think about the receivers he had the 2 years there.
Yeah, exactly. He was running 10 personnel, one back, zero tight ends.
His first year.
Because he had four first-rounders.
Exactly.
Yeah, he called it red personnel, and he just run. And why wouldn't you? Because some defensive coordinators over there sweating bullets because you got four first-round wide receivers. He's got one guy that can cover.
Right.
He's like, I got one that can cover. Who do I put him on? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to be open. So
if I was Ryan Day, I would have sold that to Jameson Williams before he left.
Yeah. So keep this in mind, though. This is why I think Sark – and this is why he brought in, I think, Brennan Marion, too. He does want to add more dimensions to the offense. I wouldn't be surprised next season if you see a little less 12 personnel. Like I said, they run 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, 40% of the time. You may see him drop that down to 35% next season and 35, maybe even 30%, only so that he can get more two back sets on the field, more 20 and 21 personnel. Brought in Brennan Marion, who's bringing in the go-go offense, which is all about being able to weaponize two back sets, specifically in the running game. I brought this up a couple of weeks ago in my film study, and I'm still breaking it down. But offensively, Texas' most successful passing personnel package last year was 20 or 21 personnel, two backs. Or one tight end, two backs, zero tight ends. Why? Because teams thought they were going to run when they came out with two backs. And actually, Texas like to spread teams out in either four wide, two by two, or they'd go empty formation, and they would throw it out of two-back sets with most teams trying to put a linebacker or a safety on a Rojo or a Bijan. Mistake. Big mistake, by the way. So Texas had a 73% completion percentage out of two-back sets, higher than their completion percentage out of 12 personnel or 11 personnel, 8.4 yards per attempt. Highest yards per attempt out of any personnel package. And also, if you go look at, you know, out of that, the explosive play rate is kind of what you're looking at. It was higher out of two-back sets than it would have out of 12 personnel. So I do think Sark's going to get more of those two-back sets out there, but don't mistake it. He loves his 12 personnel. I think you're still going to see a lot of it. But now with Jaleel Billingsley, you get a little bit more experience in that room, too, between Jatavion Sanders and between Gunnar Helm and Juan Davis, now Jaleel Billingsley. But between that group, prior to Billingsley coming aboard, you only had one catch combined between all those guys with Cade Brewer leaving, Jared Wiley. Jaleel Billingsley is crucial. I don't know if he brought him in because he wants to bring more depth to that room or brought him in because maybe he anticipates some more attrition in that room. Maybe some more guys are going to leave out of that tight end room. Either way, you need more bodies. I think Jaleel Billingsley is going to walk in and be a kind of a walk-in starter. And if I had it my way, Jatavion Sanders will be the other starter. And I would use those guys.
Is that just to keep him?
No, I would use him because he's a freak.
That. Yeah.
I imagine him as kind of like Jeremiah Hall is used with Oklahoma, or how honestly he's Aaron Hernandez.
Like an H-back.
He's Aaron Hernandez to me, not Aaron Hernandez,
the
murderer.
Yeah.
But Aaron Hernandez on the field, who was used as a fullback / H-back, but they would line up in a slot, and they would line them up at tight end. They'd use them all around. To me, that's Jatavion Sanders. It was gangster. Yes, it was. But he was a freak.
In many ways. He was a freak.
He was a freak athletically, and I think Jatavion Sanders has some of that. So he would be my Aaron Hernandez. And I'd make the other tight end kind of my Gronk.
Right.
And that's how I would use those guys.
It's going to be a weird pitch, but he'll get it once we put the film on.
He'll get it. Yeah. You put the film on, let him watch Aaron Hernandez, the player.
We want you to be Aaron Hernandez. Wow. You're really opening stuff up. No rules for me, huh? I must be special.
We don't have a Tim Tebow to keep y'all in line. So, yeah, we don't need that kind of stuff. But, yeah, so Jahlil Billingsley, though, I do think you'll see a ton of 12 personnel, but expect him now to be able to stretch the field vertically with that 12 personnel. If you go look at their passing stats out of 12, they were pretty weak. Only 7 yards per attempt. The completion percentage actually was higher than you think. It was around 68%.
You said the tight ends were like 3.5?
Yeah, but you look at average depth of target. Cade Brewer.
That matches our eyes, my memory right
now. Yeah, they never got down the field. So if you were defending the tight ends, I mean, honestly, let's be honest, you would flat foot read everything.
Yes.
I'm flat foot reading that tight end. I'm going to flat foot cover this guy because if he does go past 10 yards, the likelihood of the actual quarterback hitting him or targeting him past that range, very unlikely. So all the safeties would flat foot read everything. You go back and watch the film, flat foot reading, and actually coming downhill against Texas a lot of the times.
Oklahoma State was, I know.
You can make them pay for that. RPOs, the tight ends slipping right behind you, delayed releases, which you and I love, right? Cross the formations, all those types of things. And I think Sark's looking at that and saying, man, if I had a tight end that could stretch the field, I could do some of that. That's what Billingsley is going to be to him.
I actually thought we'd see more delayed releases last year. We saw a couple, but
he's concerned about the offensive line being able to hold up with that delayed release. But I think if you do it combined with the RPO, I think it works beautifully. You know what I mean? It's not really a delayed release. I would just say it's more of a kind of a chip and release with that RPO, but man, it works really good. It's almost like a glance route for the tight end. And then you bring another one almost right behind it as a quick slant front side.
Yep.
And oh man, that's your two tags. That's your RPO tags right there, both of them.
There it is.
Beautiful thing.
Good stuff, man. Yeah. I mean, when you look at the skill position, I know that I talk about the offensive line a lot, and let's not discount that, but there's a chance if people stay healthy and they can utilize Billingsley. We know what's in the backfield. A lot of it's going to be about Quinn Ewers, but pretty excited just with the skill talent and their skill personnel and what their talent is.
No. That's a nice pickup by Sark, man. You can tell that he's thinking about how to get the best weapons around Quinn Ewers. If he is indeed, the worthy of all these expectations, and if he exceeds him or meets him, and you got an X-man around him, a freshman All-American wide receiver, and a Bijan Robinson, potentially an All-American running back, get him some more weapons. Yeah, you can double team X-Man all you want, and I'll stack the box to stop Bijan. If you do, that's going to make life real easy to beat you in other ways.
Yep.
That's what he wants to do.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. We'll see if Billingsley and these Texas players are going to be in the Big 12 in 2023.
Sure.
Right now, we're kind of assuming they are. Well, the Big 12 apparently is engaged in plans to split into 2 7-team divisions. We'll get into it up next. Tuesday, good selection here, Cameron. Rod and I both knew that one. Rod, do you know the artist?
I don't know the artist, but I do know the song.
Let me give you a hint. They beat Texas this year.
Kansas?
There you go.
Good call.
That's a good hint right there. That was actually a great hint.
Yeah. I was going to say Oklahoma.
A lot of people beat Texas, so it wasn't that easy, but easy enough.
Yeah, you had to go through the 7 in your head. Speaking of 7, Big 12 is planning to split into 2 7-team divisions beginning in the 2023 season. That'll be
interesting.
Yeah, that'll be the – so Big 12 athletic directors, including those from conference newcomers BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF, met last month in Las Vegas – to begin deciding how the league will look for 2 seasons ahead of Texas and Oklahoma departing for the SEC. Now, Rod, it may not be 2 seasons, but right now, I mean, we know Texas will be in the Big 12. I say we know. We feel like Texas will be in the Big 12 next year, and it's looking like in 2023. Mm-hmm. This is going to be crazy. And you know they're not going to do Texas and Oklahoma any favors with this.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to see the downside of what's the downside? Are we missing the? Because right now,
the downside is that they're not going to do you any favors and they're going to screw you with scheduling.
Oh yeah. I'm talking for Texas. Obviously, your downside is the Big 12 is being petty. And,
yes.
Right. And they're holding a grudge because you're leaving. So I get that. Yeah. And we know that with the officials, all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about just actually looking at it from the perspective of the Big 12 and the health of the overall conference. So take the Texas fandom out of it, looking at it through burnt orange glasses, which is we do for everything. Is there a downside to this for the Big 12?
No.
Exactly. I don't think so.
Because, I mean, once Texas and Oklahoma leave, you're going to be at 12 teams, so you can do that then. I mean, that's how the Big 12 started. It was 12 teams, and you had a North and a South.
Yeah. I don't see any downside. I think it's actually it may end up being a good move for the Big 12.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
We'll see how it all plays out.
But you're right. For Texas, though, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
You need to get the hell out of this conference as soon as you can, because I'm not saying they're trying to sabotage you, but there is some stuff going on.
And there is actually an NCAA rule that states that any league with 12 or with more than 12 teams must split into divisions. So they would have to with the 14 teams. We'll see if they keep that once Texas and Oklahoma leave and they're at 12, because it would not be required to continue to split it up. I don't know how short term this is.
Good. Okay, so it could just be a 1 year thing.
It could be.
All right.
Or a two-year thing.
Interesting.
And guys, I did not think that, and look, we still have a long way to go, but that Texas was going to, that they were going to actually have Texas and Oklahoma finish out this contract. I figured there was a way that they were going to get out of that.
I did too. Yeah. I mean, I thought they had lawyers. I thought I figured they had a team of lawyers that were going to find the loophole in the contract, or Texas prints money over there on the 40 acres, and I figured they just write a check.
For Oklahoma?
I don't know.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No. I think that actually is the holdup from some of the reports is that Oklahoma doesn't want to write a blank check. Not a blank check, but then write a big fat check, I should say, to get out of the rest of the contract. And Texas obviously would be willing to, because Texas has that kind of money. And Oklahoma's like, well, no, we actually are not in that kind of position to do it. And I don't think Texas is going to pay Oklahoma's way. They ain't that cool.
No.
They're not that cool.
No. We're tied together, but we're definitely not that cool.
Yeah, we're not that cool.
One person involved in the process said it would be easier if we don't reshuffle the deck in 2026. So by placing Texas and Oklahoma in opposite divisions beginning in 2023, that would allow the Big 12 to stay with the same composition of 2-6 team. And I think that's what they're going to do.
That's what they should do.
Because my guess is they are, from just reading this, they are going to stick with that even though they don't have to.
So put Texas and Oklahoma in separate divisions and still have them play, of course, the Texas OU game, right? I'm sure they'll have like a cross, like, because that, right? They would have to be, if they go north-south.
You still have them play.
They would have to both be in the south to play, like,
what if the Big 12 really screwed him and
said,
no, you guys have to play a non-conference to keep the rivalry going?
Oh, they won't do that, no.
You sure?
I don't know, but I don't know if they can. That's interesting,
though. She's not too happy about the breakup. Don't be surprised if your clothes are on fire.
Okay, see, now I got to try to see.
And actually, look, one working group member joked that Texas and Oklahoma should be placed in the same division to ensure that at least one of the programs wouldn't play for the football championship.
There you go. Well, that's the way it would work, because that's the way it used to work.
That was originally what I thought.
But that's how it used to work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was in the South.
Yeah, in the South together.
In the South division all the time.
But you got to remember, when they started that, one, geographically it made sense because of Nebraska and Colorado.
That's true, good point.
But also, when we started the Big 12, Nebraska was the dominant program, and Colorado was right there.
You had a blue blood in the North,
yes,
and you had the blue bloods in the South. You had both to balance it out. Good point.
Right.
It was different back
then.
And
Oklahoma was coming off about a decade of not playing very good football.
No, Bob Stoops had just came. I mean, the Big 12 was in 96, and Bob Stoops came in 99.
Wasn't there yet, right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. They would have to... if they don't put them in the same division, they'd have to give them almost a waiver that, okay, they play the Texas OU game, that kind of thing, which would obviously upset some other members of the Big 12, long-standing members who are going to be part of the future of the Big 12. Well, why do they get a waiver to play? Da, da, da. So I'm with
you. Why are you kissing their ass now? It's too late.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll say, nah, you got to, that's one of your, that'd be weird. They can't do that. Because the schedule's already set. They can't do that.
Yeah, look, I mean.
So I don't know how they'll do it.
This whole thing is weird. I mean, if you've ever had to stay in a relationship because you're in the same place, right, and you've broken up, like, it's just odd. Nothing feels comfortable about it.
Oh, it's a lot of divorced couples that have to live in the same home because they just can't afford to move. They can't afford to live in separate, separate homes. So they just live together, but they're divorced. Ugh. Is live in separate rooms for the time they can save the money.
Someone listening right now is going through that.
No, it happens God a lot more than you think. Happens a lot more than you think, actually. There's a New York Times article about it recently.
We're three hours in. We got 1 hour to go. We'll get back to UT football coming up next. Some spring battles to watch for on the 40, and we'll talk some Texas basketball the next hour as well.